I just thought we'd share. Some of you guys don't know us as well. Bridgeway has been my home since 1998. I worked with several of you guys to develop this arts community that was here, that is here. And then I felt a call to go back to graduate school. And I think it was 2002 or so, I moved back. Bills in graduate school were getting exorbitant. And I realized that, you know, this degree is not going to make me any more money. It's just going to make me more me. So, yeah, it's kind of a tough thing to keep, you know, spending money, a lot of money on theology and cultural studies when, you know, you're going to have to be paying that back on a teacher's wage. So I moved back here because, honestly, this is the place I wanted to be. I couldn't think of any other place. I was studying all these things about culture and the church and the history of the church and theology of the church. And I just kept going, yeah, like, I've tasted that. I've been involved in that. I've done these things, the mission, the communal aspect of the church. And I came back and I taught sixth grade for 3 years in order just to be here and to be with you. And I tried to stick around as long as I could. I tried to stay in Oklahoma City, but just things came together and we felt like we knew that God was calling us onto something else. And my tears are important for you this morning, so that's what I want to give you. So in the process of all this, I met Susanna in Austin. I was doing a concert down at, some of you guys might know Hope Chapel down in Austin, Texas. I was doing a concert there. She was on her way to go do her PhD, and we actually fell in love through writing of letters. And I'm kind of an aspiring writer myself, and I've always had this fantasy of being able to write letters and woo a woman's heart through letters, and that just happened. God gave me that blessing, and then she moved here a year before we left, and we had a year together with you, and now we're in Holland, Michigan. It's near Grand Rapids. It's about 40 minutes west of Grand Rapids. We're pretty much right on the lake. And it's nice and cold up there. We had 6 inches of snow the day we were supposed to fly down here. Can you believe that? This last Thursday. And it's kind of mind-boggling. I grew up in Illinois before I moved here, and I was like, I'm never going to live in Michigan. And now I'm still kind of like trying to figure that out. So we got up there in August, and I'm the minister of music and art for the campus ministries. That means I do all the worship for the chapel services and the Sunday evening service as well. The wonderful dream of this job for me, and knowing that it was a God thing, is that the description actually said, we want someone with the heart of an artist to come and be an artist amongst us. And they gave me an office that's basically at a recording console. I have my office is in a recording studio, which is a big passion of mine. I'm going to get to teach classes next year, worship and theology of worship and theology of worship and music. Man, I can't believe I can't remember these titles. And then next fall, I'll be teaching a church music course. Susanna, we just found out, has been hired as a full one-year contract in the English department. So that's a huge answer to prayer. She's been adjunct teaching freshman comp, and that's kind of brutal, you know, trying to do that over and over again. So now she's going to actually get to teach some classes that are more a part of her heart, some creative writing courses. And what I want to say to you is that we feel very much sent by this church. I started articulating my vision and what I felt God was calling me to a long time ago as cultural missionaries. I want to be a cultural missionary. We send a lot of people overseas, but we're all of us here missionaries here while we're here. And I wanted to be someone who God could allow me to think. We talk about how to study, you know, the Indian culture if we're going to go to India and how to get inside of that. We think about that if we're going to go cross-cultural, but we don't think that deliberately about how to do that even here. And I believe that's a primary part of our discipleship, that we don't belong to America, we don't belong to Oklahoma City, but yet we are placed here. So we do belong in some sense that God's called us here, but we don't belong here in the sense this is not our home. So we have to work really hard to kind of get outside of it sometimes, even though it's hard, in order to study it, to identify what is a tool that God could use, what is a tool that God shouldn't use, and then to leaven the culture that way. And so that's been my passion, and now I get to actually do that with college students. And we really feel like this is a mission that you have sent us on. So we really covet your prayers, and we ask you to continue to pray. The campus ministry is about 13 years old. The school is a Christian college, but it is not the kind of thing where you have to sign any statements of faith to teach there or go there. But ironically, we have somewhere between 700 to 1,200 students that come voluntarily to these services four times a week. So there's a lot of things going on there. We need your prayers that God would continue to place us in places where we can love professors, where we can love students, and where we can slowly shape the culture where God can be revealed and beautiful at Hope College. So I have a couple things that I want to share with you, but I'm going to actually have my wife, the poet, read a poem. This is Arts Weekend, so we thought we might do some art first. So one thing I do want to say about her is, you know, I said this last night, most of her poetry, she doesn't sit down to write for Christians. And a lot of artists feel a lot of pressure, if they're a Christian, that their art is only going to be valid if it somehow fits into a worship service. And I think that's beautiful and wonderful and good, and we want the arts to be here on Sunday mornings. But there's a lot of kinds of, there's many, many different types of art. And most of them aren't going to be appropriate for Sunday morning. And she is an excellent writer, and we just found one poem that actually does work. But I encourage you... I encourage you to get her book and work through it, because while she doesn't write for the church, I believe that her writings are good for the church. And I'll explain that some more later.
We take the sky. We take the sky as if red is something we could own, something we might find in the stillest moments. As if the earth is humane and wouldn't break our bones. None of his were broken, not one, allegedly. Red is in the land, too, is in the way we look at each other, the hardness of our sleep, the need to fall down, to tell of the pox that swept Aunt Jess, the drink that ushers father, the path that never leads to wealth or rest or health, but the one we always take. Shalom, we say. Buena suerte. We always take the sky, fold it over ourselves, the soil, run it across our skin and cling to it. Savoring the tart of a lemon, palming a bar of soap even when our hands are clean, naming the insects that fly across the white bulb of moon late at night, rakishly loving the one who knows our smell, and saying, as if they are not questions, isn't this how we stay alive? And why shouldn't I burrow here? This is how we drum on, cold and ungrowing. What more than to be alive? It all hums. So we die in small bits. So the egg-shaped hollow that sits behind our stomachs. So he died and rose again on the third day. So what? We take the sky. We scatter on the land. We fall down, grab the everythings, the tiniest cures, fall down again, wash ourselves in red, and know, unwittingly, it is not enough. More certain than anything, it will never be. And then, here, in the stillest moments, the story rushes again, the veil splitting, stone rolling, Mary, Peter, John running, linen and spices like a limp cocoon, the blur of angels, the one red splash of a second like a rose breaking open when we know. And somewhere inside us, a small green seed pricks the dirt, coiling for air. He soothes and stirs, fingertip size holes in his hands, roaming the soil and the sky for our broken bones. And the shaking on the earth is our brand new lives. Alleluia, we say, feeling even the empty oval of our stomachs rise.
So what I feel led to talk with you about this morning is cultural renewal. There's a lot of talk about the arts in the evangelical church in America, especially in the last 10 years. And they want to talk about cultural renewal as if we, the church, are then going to go out into culture and renew it out there. And sure, of course, that's a dream. We'd like to see America grow. I'm really depressed by the top 40 music that's on the charts. I'd like to see better music out there. I'd like to see better movies in the theaters. That's great. Those are good things. But one of the things that the church does not talk about very much is the cultural renewal within itself. And it's a whole lot easier, and I would like to say a whole lot more arrogant, to assume that we want to go out there and fix them, to shift their culture, without stopping to think about the culture that we're imbibing, the air, the cultural air that we're breathing, the cultural soil in which we are sowing. And I believe that if there is going to be any kind of leavening of the dough, if we are going to be the salt and the light when we go out there, we have to become a different kind of people in here. Because honestly, there's a whole lot of people in the world that want to say, so you're telling me that God hangs out with those people down there in that building on that corner? Are you kidding me? God? And they want to believe in God. They want to dream about God. They want to think that God is a powerful and beautiful being. But it's hard for them and their world and their culture to believe that God would associate with those people down there. And it's a tough thing for us to swallow. Because if God is real and true, then he is going to infuse our beings. He's going to get inside of our hearts and our minds, and he's going to transform every single corner of our being. And we will then shine with a kind of light and a kind of beauty that they will then want to bang down the doors of the church to hang out with and to be involved in. So what I want to talk about is cultural renewal in here. And I want to tell you just a quick story about how I got into this whole thing about arts pastoring, why I even care about this. I went to a Christian college, and in the summers, I was outside of Chicago. In the summers, I would go over to Evanston, and I lived with Brock Bingaman. If you guys know Brock Bingaman, he was at seminary at that point, and he was an intern at the Vineyard up there. And we were trying to be men of faith, and we were going out and doing street work late on the nights, Friday nights. We'd start at 10, and we'd walk the streets till 3 in the morning trying to talk to these street people, and it was awful. We got cussed at and yelled at, and the whole time we're praying, Brock and I back up in our apartment, we're praying that God would give us a heart for the unlovely. That was the word I remember we used a lot. We prayed, God, give us a heart for the people that everyone else is ignoring. And give us compassion for that. We were watching movies on Mother Teresa and reading books about Mother Teresa, and we were eating like $100 a month in food and not using the elevator and not using the dishwasher. And we were like really trying to be fanatics. And we were like, I want to be transformed into the kind of person who can go down the street, be the light of God, and change poverty. And so we were doing that all summer long. And I got to tell you, nothing happened in my heart. I was terrified the whole time. Every single Friday night was an act of faith. And during the week when I wasn't there, I was going, oh man, I got to go back. Because I remember the last time when the drunk homeless man got up in my face and yelled at me, or the other time when this gang member came up and wanted to drive me down the dark alley and show me where his best friend got shot last summer. You know, it was mind-blowing, and nothing ever happened in my heart. I was praying, God, I see so much in the scriptures about the poor, and what about that? I want to be one of these people that goes in there and does that. Well, nothing really happened. Nothing moved me to become one of those people. Went back to college my senior year. I was in the dining commons. And I remember going in and out of the dining commons, and I'd look over, and there's this part of our dining commons where all the bohemians hung out, all the avant people. There was the guys that wore skirts, went barefoot all day long. They had piercings in weird places. And I knew a lot of these students because I was a philosophy and English major, and I also took some art classes. And so I knew some of them, but I was still kind of nervous around them. I grew up in a small farm town. I had to go to take art on Monday nights in order to take art, and it was from a community college professor that came out, and eventually I had to give that up in order to play football. JV football games were on Monday night. So I was not an artsy kid. I said yesterday, you know, if I had one more Depeche Mode listening, comic book reading, D&D playing friend, I would have been more artsy. But there were none of those kids in my school. So I was trying to figure out how to be a jock, and I never got the letter jacket or the ring. But I get there, and I've gone through all these years of school, and I'm looking over and I'm seeing these students, and my heart is just melting, and I couldn't really understand why. And slowly as I started to pray about it, I realized I prayed for a heart for the unlovely, and there they are. Here in this evangelical, sophisticated school, there's all these people that were extremely misunderstood, and they were so misunderstood that they started to wear it almost like a confrontation to everyone else. I'm gonna construct my identity in such a way so that I dare you to try to love me. So they were the unlovely in my evangelical Christian school that nobody was reaching, and they were the ones that were slipping through the cracks. So that was my senior year, and I decided to go ahead and start my first little small group with some artists, and I grabbed some musicians and a guy who was a poet, and I tried to do a Bible study with them. But I realized, you know, if anybody's going to really be able to communicate to our society, and be able to meet people outside of the church and communicate grace and truth, it's going to be people like this, because these are talented artists. And so I wanted, actually, I really started thinking about it as a learning curve for me to figure out how to grow as a human being. So that's the first quote I want to then turn to. There's this Danish art historian that used to be a really good friend of Francis Schaeffer. If you know Francis Schaeffer, his name's Ruckmacher. Ruckmacher says this thing that just, like, it's a punch in the gut. He says, Jesus didn't die so that we could become Christians. Jesus died so that we could become humans. It's kind of offensive at first. It's offensive to religious spirits. I want to say it again. Jesus didn't die so that we could become Christians. Jesus died so that we could become humans. And I could sit down right now, you know, and just leave it right there. That preaches. And I could just sit down, but the pastoral side wants to unpack that a little bit for you. So ultimately, a human being is what God came to redeem. He is the first and the most ultimate, the most beautiful human being. He's our prototype. He's our map for what it means to wake up in the morning, to get clothed, to eat, to go to work. And so everything that we do should be seen and thought through him. So what has happened then, that story I was telling you about, what has happened is artists have become these estranged people. And I remember a man who discipled me in high school at summer camp. I was hanging out one time with him and his wife, and I remember the first time I heard his wife refer to the artsy fartsies. And I'd never really stopped to think about that. I was like, whoa. And there was kind of a condescension in the way she said that, and it kind of hurt a little bit. But we do. We start to think about those kind of elitist people. And it's either the avant and the misunderstood, or it's the pop stars that we celebrate. Either way, they're removed from us. And so what I'm trying to say is that art is a very human thing. Art is a thing that we're always doing, that you're doing. And it's not something that is estranged. And as a matter of fact, if you think about it in terms of like the Screwtape letters, If I was the demon who was trying to mess up God's plan on the earth, one of the very things, the very first things I would do is I would confuse the arts. I would make Americans' imagination so small and so anemic that all that they think that art is for is working really hard during the week so they can go home on the weekend and watch TV and maybe a movie or two. That's what art really is. And everybody else who's doing art, well, that's weird and strange. I don't have anything to do with that. Matter of fact, I would get their imagination so saturated with marketing and what the image of a man or a woman is that I would not allow them to think about what a real man or what a real woman could be. And I would begin to try to control their imaginations, because the imagination, where arts function, is what I call the landscape where our hearts and our minds meet. Where God comes into our imagination is the landscape where our hearts and our minds meet. And I would confuse their imagination, because then if I could control their imagination, I could skew their understanding of who God is and who other people are and who they are as human beings. So what we end up having is an imagination that is so saturated by consumerism that we start to then point fingers at people who are trying to do beautiful things and think that they're strange, or even people that are trying to ask good questions about what we're doing, so that we couldn't actually worship ourselves. So this is going to require a different kind of discipleship. And this is why art is so great for this. I think art begins to kind of burst some bubbles. If we really take art seriously, and I want you guys to take this seriously, I want you to realize this is for you and your discipleship. Whether or not you're an engineer or a plumber or a teacher or a landscape architect, this is for you. And so it's going to require a different kind of discipleship. And this is why art is so great. Discipleship is of our whole selves. The first commandment is to love the Lord your God with your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength, with your whole being. Well, it just so happens that art requires the activity of all of those things. Art itself is a meditative act that involves all of our being, our hearts, our minds, our soul, and our strength. So if it's a good piece of art, your mind is going to be stretched some, your heart is going to be moved, and somehow it's going to involve your body. When it's music, this is the great thing about music. A lot of people think that music is all just about spirit. It's all about ephemera. But music is probably, I want to say, one of the most physical things that possibly could happen. It's so mysterious that I could listen to them up there thumping away. They are moving their bodies, hitting things or hitting strings, and that is translated to a place where all of a sudden we're like, boom, and we want to start moving, and we saw people start moving. And even if your body doesn't move, your heart's moving, and it actually causes a chain reaction. And I think that's one of the reasons why music is so powerful in our society, is because it translates to every single person in a different way, and we're always affected by it. It requires our whole being in order to engage in music. So art itself, when we participate in good art is going to involve all of our being. And the problem with bad art, then, is it's art that only appeals to a particular part of our being. Art that titillates or is gratifying just to our sense of pleasure. And I don't have any problem with entertainment, but one of the things that I often teach on is that amusement, the original Greek fundamental root of the word amusement, amuse, the word muse in the Greek, is that thing which would inspire us to think. And just like an atheist means a non-God person, and a muse means no thought. All right? So if we are spending all of our time and our money being entertained just for the sake of being amused, that means that we're not using our minds when we engage in art, and we turn it off. So what that means is most of the art is like drinking a can of pop. You crack the top, you guzzle it down, and you throw it away, never to think about it again. It hasn't affected you. This is why reading a good novel is so powerful, because reading a novel requires you to come back to the page over and over again. You might not like the first 50 pages. And you guys, you know, maybe you haven't read a novel since high school, all right? All right? Think about it, though. Remember the last book that you read? It was assigned, or a friend recommended it, and you read the first 50 pages. And all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, I kind of like this. And you're sucked in, even if it's hard. And there's something, and the thing is, it lasts. It's made its imprint on you. It has become a part of who you are. And so you can go back and you can dwell inside of that novel in a way that maybe that kind of silly movie that you watched on Friday night just disappeared. The novel's become a part of your world. It's a way that you then see the world. So one of the things that I want to say that's most important about art is that it is then communal as well. As we are then engaging with art through all of our senses, it's also something that we share. This is one of the most beautiful things about art, is it requires sharing. So it's a whole lot more fun to share food with people. Like one of the biggest tragedies would be somebody to give me an opportunity to go out and have a steak dinner by myself. You know, I want to be sitting at the table going, and I want that person to go, yeah, he's having a good time, isn't he? And I want to be able to go, yeah, try some of this. What are you having? Let me try some of that. Right? All right, now, isn't that what worship is? Isn't that what we were doing this morning? Is all of us going around, God is good. Oh, that feels good, right? Right? Look, people are raising their hands. People are dancing. Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's a shared thing, all right? If that's the way God made us to be worshiping creatures, we can do that all the time throughout the week with everything that we do. And the way that we dress, and the way that we read books, and the way we go to class, and it's a shared thing. So what ends up happening is you start sharing books, you start sharing good music, you start sharing your thoughts, and you become a deliberate person who is engaging the world in a much more intentional way. How am I doing on time? Joel? Am I okay? All right. So ultimately, I just want to give you a real quick tour. I'm talking about the mind. Discipleship of the heart is a very, very sweet and good thing. And we're good at it here at Bridgeway Church. But if we're going to engage in culture, if we're going to engage in the arts, it's also going to require discipleship of the mind as well. And I want to let you know, I feel the tension of that. I've been a teacher. I've taught sixth grade. I've taught high school. And I know how uncool it is to raise your hand. I know how uncool it is to confess that you studied for the test. I had friends in high school that it was cooler to get a C on a test you didn't study for than to get a B plus or an A minus on a test that you did study for. So we're saturated. One of the things in our society is don't think. Be amused. Turn your mind off. But if we're going to have cultural renewal in our churches, we're going to have to engage our minds some. And I want you to know it's going to be hard. It's going to be awkward. So one of the things with that mind, I want to just briefly give you a glimpse at two major doctrines that are the foundation for this. The incarnation tells us, John 1:14, the word became flesh and it dwelt amongst men. And all of God's fullness was revealed through that person. So that mystery of spirit and body, art is good because God became man. He walked on this earth, and he was a cultured being. He was a Jewish man. And a lot of us want to think of Jesus as just spirit, and he transcended to heaven, and all he's going to do is to take our spirits to heaven. Well, the scriptures actually tell us that there is going to be a new creation. There's going to be a new earth. We're going to have redeemed bodies. And C.S. Lewis, in his book, Josh, what's that book? Great Divorce? Is that it? Great Divorce. You know, the whole image is of heaven as being more real, more powerful, more substantial than this earth. And the damned souls, the people that actually, it's kind of this flight of the imagination. C.S. Lewis imagines these spirits that come up, and they're so impoverished as souls that they can't even pick up the rocks because it's so powerful and so heavy. So a lot of us want to think that heaven is just earth, is just spirit. Well, we are incarnated beings made in the image of God. And we as cultured beings are always doing creative things. Every single thing you're doing is always creative. So it's not a question of if you're going to participate in art or culture. The question is, how are you going to participate in art and to what extent? How serious are you going to be in letting the Lordship of Christ reign over your cultured self? All your spare time is the most powerful thing you can possibly think about and how you do that. And I'm going to let you work that out for yourself because I really believe that's what fear and trembling is. Being a human being is trying to figure out. God took us so seriously that he became man and he walked amongst us. And he said, now be like me. And I don't know exactly what that means, but that's what the church is for. That's what we're here in community to participate in this world culturally with our hearts and our minds, to come together in discipleship groups to figure this out. How do I become a culture of self so that when I go to work, I am full of God's truth and beauty so much that it shines through me and it shocks the people around me? Second major doctrine that I bring into the arts is this: the notion of the Trinity. And I just want to read. The Trinity is never spoken of. There's never, you know, really used that word. But the Trinity is a word the church has used in order to try to get at what we read in the scriptures in passages like John 17, verse 20. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one. Father, just as you are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us so that the world may believe that you have sent me. And I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me. May they be brought to complete unity to let the world know that you sent me. So the witness of God's presence on the earth is our ability to indwell within the Godhead. The Trinity is one of the most confusing doctrines for the Western mind. We want to dissect it and chop it up in all these different diagrams. You guys probably seen the circles, you know, kind of linked together. We have these paradigms to try to get at this. And one of the things that we can do in order to understand some of these doctrines is actually use the theology by seeing the theology by looking through the arts. One of the ways of explaining the Trinity is by looking at a musical chord. How do we understand 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 1? That's math. That's a Western mindset of everything's orderly and logical. Well, math doesn't really help us understand this mystery, but maybe music can. Think about a chord. A chord is basically three notes played on the piano at the same time. They each have their distinct sound, but when they come together, they sound as one whole. Does that make sense? All right, so the Trinity is a reality. It is a fundamental fact of the universe. There's another type of way of seeing the world through the Trinitarian and the incarnational lens. We are physical and spiritual creatures, but we are also made to be in communion like the Godhead as three in one. So one of the ways that the early church fathers explained the Trinity, he redefined the notion of a person. If we think of a person as only a static being, if I am an individual, if I'm a rock, and I've carved out my destiny, then I'm just a static being. But if I rethink what the early church fathers said about a person, that a person, this is what Basil of Caesarea said, a person is a being that is always in relation to. A person is a being that is always in relation to. So that means, this is why my tears are so important. Because I am who I am because of who you are. And I would not be who I am if you were not who you are. The opposite of this is like those adolescent relationships. Remember? Deep, deep infatuation. A vacuous hole of a self. Love me. Approve me. Validate me. So you don't really even pay attention to who it is. Will you go with me? Yes, awesome. We're hanging out. And usually that person who checks the box is also the deep vacuole hole of a self who's needing deep affirmation. You know, you're in junior high. So you end up with need. This is the way Henry Nouwen would say it. It's need joining with need. And basically one plus one in that situation, because they're such negative already persons, dissolve each other. They become nothing when they're together. And you're like, where did they go? You know, if they were your friends, they're like, they disappeared. They're over there. And it gets even worse in college, you know, because in college your parents don't tell you to go to bed and you can just stay up till 4 a.m. and talk and talk and talk. You guys know it. You feel it, right? But good giving is the overflowing of the self. Sure, we're needy. I'm really needy. Susanna knows that. But you know what? God is moving in me so that when I love her, I am always giving to her. And my delight as her husband is to constantly give to her. And her delight as my wife is to constantly give to me. And so we have giving plus giving. And when we blend that together, all of a sudden there is this thing that comes together that's so much better than its separate parts. Because I am a being that is always in relation to. Now take that picture and plant that into the church. We come with our gifts. We come with our giving. We don't come primarily with our needs. And we can. And some of us are broken and we have hurts. And we're going to need people to one another with us and lift us up and bear our burdens. But the beauty of the church is that we are giving so much that there's such an abundance of giving that just giving and giving and giving and giving and giving. And there's so much love and there's so much goodness that it testifies to God's presence on the earth. Now, how does art fit into that? Well, art itself, a good piece of art that engages the heart, the mind, the soul, and the body, is a giving being too. All right, so think about the songs that you return to over and over again throughout your life. It's a good song. Why is it a good song? Because it has a being in it that is constantly giving to you. There's something there to receive. A good painting in your living room, not the kind of painting that matches with your couch. All right? Not talking about that kind of painting. I'm talking about a painting that when you walk by it, you're like, whoa. And then when you walk by it again, you're like, whoa. Still there. And you can't not pay attention to it because there's something there that is giving itself to you. And it's constantly speaking to you more and more. Sometimes it's hard to know what to say about art. And this is why it's easy to point fingers and to draw these lines between arts types and non-arts types. Because we feel like we're lonely when we can't say anything clearly about why it's cool or why it's interesting or why it's good. We want to be able to reduce the piece of art down to a couple points and explain it. And I liked what Don said yesterday, that trying to say anything meaningful about music is like trying to dance about architecture. Another philosopher just said, there's no way to say anything meaningful about music. And, I can't remember the composer yesterday. I took a stab at it. But the composer, the pianist who plays a piece, and we go, what does that mean? And he turns and he plays it again. And so part of engaging in art is like engaging in a relationship with another person. It's so big, there's so much in there, that you cannot explain it. You cannot tear it down into parts and dissect it. And if I tried to do that with my wife, if I tried to break her down into parts and explain her, that would be so undignifying to her as a being. To reduce her to a couple concepts. And so art, like if you watch a really good movie, it's really, really good, you should be speechless when you walk out. It probably should take you a couple days to recover. It should take you some time to figure out, I don't know how to talk about this. And when you do talk about it, you should talk about it with your hands open, very carefully, and say, you know what, I think it might be about this. What do you think? So ultimately, what I say art is for, if it's engaging the heart, mind, soul, and the body, is it's like having a conversation with that art piece, just like it's having a conversation with another human being. One of the things that we're missing in the church, what we're missing in America, one thing that could be part of our cultural renewal is the art of conversation. And we could be trained in how to have good conversation with other human beings and the way that we train ourselves to have conversation with art. And I want you to know that the primary secret to good conversation is not talking. The primary secret to good conversation is listening. And this comes down to St. Francis of Assisi's great prayer. That I would seek to understand before I am understood. And that is so hard. We want to control the conversation. We want to direct it. We want to be interesting. We're so needy. We want to be validated. We want people to pay attention to us and think, oh, brilliant. Oh, funny. That was funny. And so we dominate the conversation, or we don't say anything at all. We get so afraid. We want to be so in control, either dominating or so in control by not saying anything at all. So we don't try. Because if we don't try, then we can't be rejected. But having a good involvement in culture, we are made in the image of God, body and spirit. We're made in the image of God as a Trinitarian being. We are joining him for all of eternity in that fellowship of the Godhead, in that kind of a relationship. And so all of the earth is made that way. Everything around us is incarnated It has presence. It has something to react to. The problem is we've built these cities, as one philosopher says, these cities, all the chrome and neon and concrete only reflects our pain. But if we go to God's creation, our roadmap, it absorbs our pain. It has a being to it that we can then surrender ourselves to. We can have a conversation with a tree. I'm not a pantheist. I don't pray to it. But the trees and the rocks, they will cry out, right? It is groaning and waiting, right? So if all of the earth has a spirit and a being, we do too. And it is all for the sake of entering into communion and fellowshipping. So I'm going to break this down real quick into a couple last thoughts, some practical things. When we engage in the arts, one of the most powerful things for us as the church as far as mission, I want to talk about mission real quick, and I want to talk about prayer. One of the things about mission is that we can engage in the arts in a way to understand the other. Lots of times, because we're so trained to be consumed with our amusement, we want to just find art forms that entertain us and that please us, that are comfortable and safe, things that you already know. But one of the great ways of expanding yourself is by trying to engage in art that doesn't make sense. Trying to find other cultures' art. Trying to find something. And become a kind of learner who says, I want to grow. I want to see differently. I want to expand myself. I want to stretch myself. So I might go buy a classical CD next time. Or I might go look for some world music. And I'm going to learn how to like this. You guys did this in high school. All your friends were listening to that one band that you're like, oh, if they're going to listen to it, I'll buy it, whatever. And then you like torture yourself long enough and eventually like, yeah, that is cool. Right. Rock on. That for me was Def Leppard. But if you could do that for your friends, do that for the other. That's God's heart, that we would understand our neighbors and stretch ourselves. Instead of having our little kingdom and our own little world, we can use art to expand our vision of what is happening around us. Second thing I want to say practically about prayer. We can pray creatively. And one of the problems that we have with prayer is we have this really static understanding of the self. Go to your prayer closet. Shut the door. Don't talk about it. Now you go pray. You're not praying? You're not having your quiet time? You guys feel the panic? All that loneliness in your closet. Sitting still. Drool, right? Walk when you pray. Light candles. Play music. Find a good painting. Read a good poem. Make your own art, even if you don't know what you're doing. Move your body. Put on some music. Move around. Or even better, pray with other people. This is the craziest thing about Christianity. There's all these Christians who don't really want to pray or read the Bible. It's like, if you don't want to pray, that's our greatest delight. If you don't want to do the things that God gave us the gift to do, to read his words, you know, then just, I would just want to go get drunk and find a lot of women, you know? It's like, it's a lot more fun, right? Why be a boring Christian who doesn't pray? He just comes and leaves. And one of the most enticing things about prayer is praying with other people and hearing them pray. And that's what happens with art. When somebody makes a good piece of art, like last night when we sang, when Suzanne and I sang, you know, I'm still really vulnerable about this. I'm new to performing. I don't like performing. And what I ache for when I sing is an amen. Brother, let it be so. Think about that in your prayer life when you share time with other people. That you can share and you can use creative things to engage that. So, I just pray and okay. Thank you so much for listening. These are things that are very dear to my heart, and I've waited years to be able to figure out how to say these things well and to live these things well. And so I just want to pray that these things would become reality.